Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Bold Sidebar Podcast, a podcast for lawyers, judges, and professionals serving clients. I am your host, Attorney Jeff Horn. My task is to interview the best of us to discover the tips, tricks, and techniques you need to serve your client and keep your sanity. Enjoy. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Bold Sidebar. Today, I'm excited to be with my friend, Cara Parmigiani. We love saying her name. just get it out of the way, not to be a turkey about it. Cara and I met at the State Bar Association. So, little practice pointer. Go to stuff, meet people, and you make a friend and someone who's got a lot to offer to our audience. Cara comes from a legal family, but doesn't go there straight away. She is a Rutgers genetics graduate. We're going to have to talk about that. And a Seton Hall law grad. So with that, let me just say hello and see how Cara's doing today. What's up, Cara?
Hi, Jeff. Nice to talk to you today. I'm really excited.
Thanks so much. And you are the maiden voyage at our little Red Bank office. So thanks for meeting Morris County, Ocean County, Monmouth County to meet us here in the Red Bank office. You know what? Let's just start with the education piece, because I think we talked about this the first time we started to talk, that you had been a genetics and psychology undergrad. What was in your mind when you started down that road?
Well, I was always interested in science as a child. I mean, really early on, science was always my favorite class. I enjoyed it so much. And so with the developments in the field of genetics, I wanted to be able to understand what was going on so that someday maybe I could provide my input into valuable exchanges that were going on in that area. So I went to Rutgers always, you know, even since I applied, with the intention of majoring in genetics.
Right.
And I added psychology. I was about a couple of credits away from a chem minor, but I decided to throw in the towel. I graduated in 3 years by accelerating all my classes. So
Why did you do that, if I could ask?
I didn't want to get rusty over the summer, I guess. I know it seems like kind of a silly answer, but I felt like once you really got in the groove of something, it was easier to just hang in there, because my classes were so rigorous to just hang in there. Maybe not in retrospect, the best idea. I could have had more fun in college, I would suppose, but I just kept going. And I was taking, you know, physics 2 and organic chemistry 2 over the summer, you know, not having exciting times, let me tell you.
Yeah, right. I'm sure you were doing other things. We can bog down here for a minute. I know you just didn't go to school. What else were you doing as an undergrad besides knocking it out in 3 years?
I worked in student safety. I was area coordinator for all of the dormitories on the College Avenue campus. It was a student position available that worked as a liaison with the campus security. And I received an accommodation while I was in that position, and I rose pretty quickly to that position. And in the meantime, I also did martial arts, and I was on the women's ice hockey team. It was a club sport.
Oh, you snuck that one on me. All right.
I had a lot of fun on the banks.
Women's ice hockey. Mm-hmm. That's a new one. Every time we talk, I learn a little bit more. Well, I call you Swiss Army Knife, so we just got an extra little knife sticking out of the whole thing. Okay. Let's switch over to the martial arts, because that's something I wanted to get to. You brought it up quickly. Mm-hmm. You have on your website martial arts law. Now, have you invented that category?
I don't know if I have. I didn't do any research into the developing field of martial arts law. But I'm a martial artist. I've been practicing since 2000. So this is my 19th year. You know, I wasn't able to pick it up until I went to college at Rutgers. And I began immediately. It was something I always wanted to do.
Yeah.
And it started out with wrist escapes, believe it or not. I had a friend at the time who was even smaller than I am, believe it or not. I'm a towering 5'3" mm-hmm. for everybody who's who's listening. So, and she was always able to get out of any hold you put on her wrist.
Oh, really?
And I needed to know where she learned this wrist magic act with particularity. So she told me that there were these classes in a style of martial arts I'd never heard about. Yeah. Most people haven't. It's Danzanru. And it's a Hawaiian-Japanese style of martial arts. And I showed up there to learn wrist magic. I had no idea that there was actually so much more to this system. And I've been practicing it ever since and teaching it for more years than I can remember. So,
can you give me a spelling of what you just said, Danzanru?
Sure, absolutely. Danzanru is Danzanryu.
Okay, great. Put that into the show notes with the right spelling so no one gets confused. You mentioned teaching. Did you also teach martial arts while an undergrad, or that was later on?
Well, at Rutgers, you had the ability to work with children who didn't, because you just had a little bit more knowledge than they did,
right.
Assisting in the children's class, basically tumbling skills and some other basic throws and other things. And so I did that there, but my real teaching began once I graduated from Rutgers, and I went out west briefly and taught martial arts out there and took a lot of classes at Mountain Storm Jiu-Jitsu in Sonora, California.
Mountain Storm, that's mm-hmm. what it's called? That was the gym you were working out at?
Yes.
And you were teaching there also?
Yes.
So that became a career of sorts.
I wouldn't go that far, but... Because I've always done it because I've enjoyed it.
Right.
Not because I, you know, made serious money doing it. Not because... Yeah. In fact, I don't really make any money doing it.
A few dollars here or there. Nothing to write home about. I got
right.
you. So what is martial arts law?
Well, a lot of people who run their martial arts schools are very good practitioners of martial arts. And on the mat, they are outstanding. But in terms of what they need to do off the mat from a business perspective, they need some guidance, as does everybody else.
Right.
But because I've taught martial arts for a long time and I've been in martial arts, I kind of understand more about relatability to what they're trying to do and achieve. Because, I'm there, right?
Right.
So whether it be, you know, you have employment issues, you have leases with a landlord, or you're trying to buy a building for whatever purpose, or you're trying to resolve other issues related to your waivers and things, it's something that I, you know.
Okay. So idea of martial arts is supposed to be defensive. So you're playing defense for the backside of the martial artist here.
I guess you could say that, yes. I'm protecting their backsides.
Yeah, I like that. All right, cool. Well, that's very interesting. That is a unique vertical in lawyer world. So after undergrad, you did a little martial arts stuff. How long before you went back for law school?
So when I finished my education at Rutgers, I was at a martial arts event, and it was actually just a practice, and the group to the side of us changed directions, and it caused us to have a collision, and I was concussed, and I was knocked out for so long that I woke up when the EMTs were strapping me to the bodyboard, mm-hmm. or the backboard, and so I was taking the LSATs at about the same time. And not surprisingly, my scores from that year were pretty low.
Right.
So I had to wait. I decided to wait for the scores to expire before I tried taking them again. So between the time I was concussed and the time that I reapplied to law school, I did a lot of other things, but I definitely had to retake them much later.
Yeah. So how long? What was the gap then? I mean, this concussion got you off track for what you had intended to do. And then how long did it take you to get back on that track? What was that journey like?
I'm never a good dates person.
Okay,
You can ask people, I know.
Well, we're not talking about a year.
But I think it's about 5 years.
Yeah,
something.
It's like 5 years.
Right.
It's a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a similar experience. Without the concussion, I went to Rutgers undergrad. I thought I would go right to law school. I couldn't consider sitting in a chair again once I got out of school. I wouldn't be able to sit down and just be a student for a while. So I went back much later on. All right. So what are the cool stuff? I want to say you were a property manager in there also?
Yeah.
Talk to that.
So when I came back from being in California for about 11 months, I'd been, even while there also, I'd always worked with my family business.
Right.
Which is property management to some degree. And so I have put in toilets, I have walked around with exterminators, I've crawled under buildings, I've crawled up on top of them on the roof. I'm afraid of heights, but I'll still go. Wobbly ladders, everything. Changed light bulbs for people. I was there. I learned a lot of practical skills. I can, you know, do some minor plumbing stuff.
Right.
I don't try electrical stuff, though. I'm scared of electrocuting myself.
And this is some real estate assets that were owned by your family?
Yes.
And I said, all right, here's your tool belt. And here's the pile of leases. Go collect the money. Go fix some stuff.
Well, it wasn't quite like that. You know, we're very, very small. It's very small enterprise. Yeah. I mean, literally, it's my father, my brother, and I.
Right. And was your father a lawyer also?
Correct. Yes. My father graduated from Seton Hall Law 51 years ago.
Oh, excellent.
He celebrated his 50th anniversary graduation from Seton Hall last year. That's how I know specifically.
Excellent.
It's 51.
Okay, right. You don't know your years,
I don't
but you know his years.
Yes, I do.
Very cool.
So they included him as part of the ceremony that year, and I think they gave him another little certificate or something. And
oh, nice.
It was touching because he had given me my degree from law school, and then we were together for his anniversary as well. So
that's really cool. What's your dad's name?
John. Same last name. Yep. Parmigiani.
Gotcha. Very cool. I like that. And was he one to encourage the kids to go to law school, discourage, or somewhere in between?
I have to say somewhere in between. He said he wanted us all to take our own paths. There was never pressure to be an attorney or not. As necessary, he would take us to things,
right.
Court events or other things that he had to go to. And I remember one time, I can't remember which court it is, but my brother and I were playing with a tape measure. You know, the
Yeah.
Anyway, the judge was unimpressed and asked my brother and I to leave. We were just kids, and we were sitting outside on the park bench. We were continuing to
right.
play with this because you hit a certain age, and nothing is more exciting than measuring tape. And so I've also been thrown out of a courtroom. So
early
I checked off all the boxes.
That's great. Oh my God. So, but you grow up, your dad was a practitioner? I mean, he
Correct.
Was had his office or was in a firm with other lawyers? Or
So he had once worked at the prosecutor's office, the Morris County prosecutor's office, and then he went on from there to work an assortment of other jobs, but including working for a company that sold dialysis equipment.
Oh, wow.
Which was weird because I got to grow up understanding how dialysis worked, which
yeah.
is something that a second grader typically doesn't understand.
Right.
But
a second grader whose father is a lawyer and
correct.
Does not have kidney disease himself. It
yes.
wasn't related to his own
yes,
medical
that's
illness.
And that's what I meant by that, yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I see. This is a seed, though. We've just planted a seed of your interest in a wide, wide range of stuff. Your dad has that similar mindset for sure. That's coming clear. All right. So you didn't get a push from your dad. You didn't get a discouragement. So what made you as a kid getting thrown out of court because of a measuring tape incident, what made you say, you know what, this looks pretty appealing to me, right? Because you could have easily been repulsed by it, like, mm-hmm. man, these people are turkeys, they throw me out, I'm just a kid, mm-hmm. you know, dad's working hard or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a measuring tape. No, just kidding. It was not the measuring tape. Ever since I was a kid, though, my dad had a sign that was in our basement, it's now in my house, it says, honest lawyer. And I never thought of the two as being an oxymoron.
Right.
When I was in school as well, you know, people had a lot of derogatory things to say about the profession of law. And I didn't think it was accurate at all. I thought that my dad was doing what he could for people and helping people. And so as I progressed through my adulthood, I realized that that's what I wanted to do, is to help other people. And I was fortunate enough to be able to go to law school. And so I had to try and narrate my own story as to how I was going to do that. What shape would that take?
Mm-hmm.
And here I am.
Very cool. I like it. You talk about helping people, and I know from me to you, you're motivated and animated by that. But just in terms of mentors, was your dad a mentor once you actually got into law school and practicing law?
Yes. Well, my dad was always there for me.
Yeah.
Always. My dad is my biggest supporter, my hero. And we don't see eye to eye about everything, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And that's what I appreciate about him, too, is that we don't necessarily agree on everything, but we talk things over and we reason through it. But in law school, I was fortunate enough to run into not only the greatest assortment of friends I could ever hope for, but also Sister Melanie DiPietro, believe it or not. She was a nun at Seton Hall Law, and she was very logical and very determined and had a really outstanding work ethic. And she and I also didn't agree on everything, which was great. And we were like yin and yang. And it was good because she was able to help me with my studies, going through cases, talking to her about legal theories and working on things that I, you know, never thought I could do on my own without her. So Sister Melanie, and to this day, she's still a huge supporter. You know, after I got married, she sent us a gift. She took a vow of poverty, so my gift was a Bible. Thoughtful, you know. I really appreciate Sister Melanie.
Oh, man. So is Sister Melanie trained as an attorney?
Oh, yes. She's also an attorney.
So she's trained as an attorney.
Yes.
A nun. Her ministry is the law school. Or is that just an adjunct thing?
She was an adjunct professor there.
Well,
I believe.
Very interesting. There's another person that we sort of have in common that I never mind giving her praise, and that's Deb Gustin.
Oh, yes.
What's your connection with Deb Gustin?
I'm of counsel to the law office of Gustin & Gustin, and I couldn't be any more happy about our relationship. I admire Deborah Gustin greatly. She is an outstanding practitioner and nothing short of brilliant.
Yeah. For anybody who's a loyal listener, and if you're not, this is your assignment. Go back a few episodes, and we had Deb Gustin on for almost too short of a time because she was on the phone. I'm going to get her back one of these days and just keep digging because she's made practice into such a vehicle for advocacy as well.
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean, she'll deal with a client across the table like we do, and then she blows it up into an enormous legislative accomplishment as well.
Yes, well, Deborah's knowledge of the law is so deep, so deep. And that's partially how I got involved in doing so many other things with her. And I'm very fortunate to be of counsel to her firm. I'm not the only firm that's of counsel to her. There's also wonderful other practitioners, Argentino Family Law with Celeste Fiore and Jody Argentino, great people. You know, who are actively doing wonderful things.
Yes. If you meet Deb Gustin, you get to meet a lot of other great people. She's got a lot of people circling around her. And I think I mentioned this to you. Maggie Moriarty, attorney in our office, was represented by Deb Gustin in adopting her children. So there you go. Deb pops up everywhere, and justifiably so. With some of these mentors, you touched on Sister Melanie. Did she give you some specific advice that rattles around in your head as you're out there practicing and helping people?
She would always tell me that the law is a jealous mistress. And I'm sure a lot of people who practice law have heard that expression before. She has not invented this. And for those of you who are not familiar with the expression, it means that the law really does take up the majority of your time and requires much of your dedication, will finagle its way into just about every facet of your life, and will make your life a hell otherwise. So, and she was right, though. The law is a relentless beast when you practice it. It's very hard to adopt boundaries for clients and separating out your personal life because you may be away somewhere, you get an email, you get a text, you get a call. It's very hard not to respond to things. And for your practice, you know, it's difficult to not put your practice first because of, at least in my, just for me, because of that I want to care about, that I do care about people's cases and about what's going on with them. And making sure that they know that I'm listening and that I'm there.
Yeah. And we've talked about this also. You are, at least at this moment, a true solo practitioner.
Yes.
Right? Because you're operating without staff in the office, correct?
Correct.
So you must have set up some rules for yourself, hopefully rules for clients to manage the inputs.
I have, but it's all good on paper.
Yeah,
and
right.
If you're a young practitioner, you will find out soon. The best laid plans of mice and men. Today is the 3rd of July. It is about to be the 4th of July. Allegedly, I have a motion reply due on Monday. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a 4-day, you know, holiday for most people.
Right.
It's due, you know.
Sure. No, I think we're the last two sort of working on July 3rd right now. This will drop probably sometime in August, but it's July 3rd, and I'm sure this building is empty, this big building that we're in, of a bunch of lawyers and so forth. They're out of here by now. So talk to your practice then, because, you know, I have tried really to narrow down to just do family stuff. Maggie Moriarty almost only does adoption and then related family stuff. Jessica in my office just doing family stuff. So tell me about your mindset about having a general practice and handling lots of different practice areas.
Well, I know in our profession, the idea of general practice is really frowned upon. I was talking actually to my general practitioner, medical doctor, and I said, right. Is this the same thing in medicine too? He's like, yes, I'm not a heart surgeon, and it's, you know. But the truth is that I think we do have a need for general practitioners. It's nice for some people to be able to spend their life's issues with the same person. I know about you, and I've been with you there through your speeding ticket, your small will, your want to do other documents for your business or other things. I don't have to start fresh for a lot of what's going on. It's nice to know that you and I, by the time we're working through and resolving our issues, we have a rapport, we have a groove, and we're able to do more because we've been together longer. And if you do need to go see a specialist, it's better than, I'm going to go on a ledge, it's better than picking a name out of a phone book and just going there. You know, I can help you better identify your issues before you run around and start trying to figure out where you should be going to. Because often people will come in and it'll be like a law school exam.
Right.
There'll be 12 different issues. There's a dog and people running around and your business and other things. And you just have to sit down and cull through all of this and figure out what is actually going on here and kind of group things together in ways that make sense. And then from there, you're able to say, listen, this is what I can do for you, or this is what I can't do for you. And you need to go seek a specialist in this area, perhaps, to help round out your issues. A lot of people have just a variety of small problems and they have nowhere to turn to, because
right.
Big firms don't want to take their little cases, and specialists can't handle maybe conjoined problems
right.
of a bunch of different little issues. So it fills a niche that really needs attention, I think.
It's interesting. So have you created for yourself, going back to the R word, rules, some rules of, I will take a case this far, then I'll try to find a domain specialist? Or do you want to try to stay, call it the general counsel for these folks and stay in communication with them? If you are sending them to a lawyer, I don't know, do you do bankruptcy, for example?
No, I do not.
Okay, good. I picked one right. One thing you don't do. So you get them a bankruptcy lawyer, but you're maybe working on the real estate part for them, or you're working on something else that's going on in their life. Is that kind of what you're doing?
Right. Well, so at times it depends on their rapport with me and their rapport with the other attorney and what other tangential services that office can provide. If it's just an ice cold, whatever case, personal injury case, there's really not a lot I'll wind up doing, unless it's a firm that I have a rapport with, and maybe they want me to do more of the client interface just because I've spent more time with them. I may have a different rapport with them, and so it might be easier to communicate with them. Or let's say that they're unable to travel for a variety of reasons, and I might be local to them or
okay.
be able to travel. Then it might be a great relationship that we can all have, where somebody who feels comfortable with me already, we can help them out like that. Or I don't like to trample also on other attorneys' turf.
Mm-hmm.
So if I've referred them, I don't you know, I'm not micromanaging your case.
Right.
If I also ask, though, that, you know, you let me know how things are going, or the client, you know, let me know that you're being served in a way that you feel is productive. But if they receive advice from that other attorney, I'm not one to say, oh, you know, a backseat quarterback, you know, what the armchair quarterback, what they're doing. That's mm-hmm. not fair.
So. Gotcha. I gotcha. All right. So you're balancing this practice areas out. Tell me all of the practice areas. Let's say we're halfway through 2019. So you're smiling. Give me a sense of the type of cases you've handled this year. I mean, I think it's interesting. It's not for me.
Okay.
You know, I need to get just narrower and narrower as I get older and older. You know?
So what cases have I handled in 2019 specifically?
I'm using that just to frame it in some which way.
Okay. So in 2019 specifically, I have covered cases regarding patients in psychiatric facilities. And I am covering a chancery matter that involves land ownership. I have handled some family matters that include calculation of child support and parenting time. I've done more than a handful of landlord-tenant matters. I have represented a child in court and continue to do so. In the FN docket, which very few people are in.
Right.
I've done some small contracts with people. I've resolved some small claims matters. I have written some wills for people. I can't even think
real
of all
real estate closings?
I've done some real estate closings. I've written some contracts for people. I've done some municipal work, handful of those, more than a handful. And this is why filling out your insurance for me gets a little challenging at the end of the year. It's like, what percentage of each of these practice areas have you done? And I just, you know, it takes me hours to figure out. And that's only the ones I can remember at the moment.
Exactly.
And it's only the ones since January.
Mm-hmm.
I've had cases in almost every division of the Superior Court. Oh, I have one in the tax court. I have a case that's going on now. We're going to try and determine what open to the public means. And it's just... I've been in over almost every division of the Superior Court and in 15 counties. So that's just a real snapshot, and it's only picking my brain on my way out to vacation.
I totally get it. We're not going to hold you, and we're not going to go back and double check. We're going to believe everything that you told us.
Oh, I like you already. You're hired.
And it's very interesting, and it requires, to me, a lot of mental flexibility to be shifting over from representing a child in court to doing tax court, where there's a very narrow issues of law in each of those. They've got their deep stuff, and it's not just sort of going across the surface all day long. You have to make some deep dives in some stuff.
Yeah, but it depends on the issue. You know, after a while, especially with regards to tax court, it's on the non-residential development fee. So in the end, it becomes a subspecialty after you're mm-hmm. doing it, because this case has been going on for years.
Right.
So after a while, you know, when any lawyer begins a case, right? You also do research. You educate yourself. You find out more. You should be. I hope that you are. You know, following case law and other decisions,
right.
Talking to friends about it, not breaching your confidentiality,
sure.
But I mean, doing the legwork, and that's what helps too, is to have a great group of people that you can shoot ideas off. And this is another shout out to the New Jersey Bar Association. It is a great way for you to develop the friends and contacts you need, and even the message boards. Find out more about what you should be doing, but when it's something that you really feel strongly about, you'll go out there, you'll do the legwork, you know. This is all an effort in not being lazy, you know. And you can't be a lazy lawyer when you are a general practitioner, you know.
That's
it's not
sure.
like you ever settle into your armchair and you're like, oh, I've done the same thing every time. And each portion of this, you know, yes, I've done the same thing every time. But to go back and forth between it, you're right, it takes a... as my mom would say, is it mental acrobatics?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I like that term, mental acrobatics. So what does a good referral for you look like that might be different than a good referral for me or someone who really just does one more or less narrow area? Mm-hmm. What clients are you looking for? What's the perfect client that I could refer to you?
That's really interesting. Somebody that you can grow with, probably. Somebody who understands the importance of preventative legal action. So they're interested in doing things like preparing things for their business, for their life going forward, estate planning. Just needs advice on what some paperwork should look like or what questions that they need to be continuously asking in the day-to-day. That's really helpful to me because, again, I like to stay with people through the journey, right? Mm-hmm. So if they are in business and maybe a small business and they need things all the time, little things, and they don't feel comfortable going to somebody because they think they're going to be billed, you know, dramatically for every little question, I'd rather that people ask me those little questions because you know you can save more money by saying, no, wait, no, don't. Right. Don't jump into that bear trap early on. Here's what we can do to plan it. And I'm telling you, this is an anti-shout-out for LegalZoom. LegalZoom, for some people, may be a good idea, but for a lot of people, clicking those boxes or filling in whatever, if you do not have a knowledge base for the implications of what you are filling out, you may not fill out the form appropriately. A great example is I've got a case in litigation now. One of the ancillary claims on there is a trademark violation from the name he chose of the LLC.
Okay.
Usually, you know, you title an LLC something that's meaningful for you or other right. things, but this had been a LegalZoom effort before he ever got involved. He had titled it a similar name to something else, and it just caused right. a gigantic problem.
So you started getting letters from the other entity saying cease and desist all kinds of stuff like that?
I can't talk too much about this case because we are in litigation, sure. but let me just assure you that if he had gone to any attorney, perhaps that would not have been the outcome. I don't know, though,
gotcha.
But I speculate.
I got you. So the anti-legal Zoom argument for me is peace of mind, that you know there's forms that can be filled out and things like that, and it might be fine for some folks. And I'm not an anti-technology guy. I know you're not an anti-technology person, but there's a line where you get to. There's forms being filled out, information that's obvious and an educated person can read and understand. And then there's that peace of mind. Have I thought it all the way through? Have I asked myself all the questions?
Right.
Is that where you come in?
I think so too, because sometimes, I obviously have not worked with LegalZoom in any way. I have not filed anything on there, but
sure.
by that I mean to say that I'm sure that they must, as many sites do, recommend auxiliary services and products. They may not be right for what you're trying to do. They might not be ordinary, necessary, and proper, but they may be. And you may think, oh, well, I need to spend XYZ and do this thing because that's really the thing I want to do. But if it's not together with some other documents, perhaps it may not really complete the action that you're trying to do. You would say you're going to do a will. Well, you should probably do a living will and a power of attorney too. It's not just because I want to make money.
Right.
It's a simple fact that while somebody has capacity, it's easier to do these documents. And by not doing them at the time, and this is not free legal advice, it's just, it's just whatever. But if you don't do documents while somebody has capacity, otherwise you have to go through the guardianship process,
sure.
which is more difficult, more expensive. And there comes a point in time that although capacity for a will is quite low, capacity for a living will and power of attorney is a horse of a different color. So, you know, these type of things, I have no idea whether LegalZoom can counsel you through the appropriateness of auxiliary documents that would make whatever document you are working on more important. And similarly, would you know whom to pick to help you assist through other things? You know, it's hard. So I don't think it's a great idea for most people, but there you go.
Yeah. Well, you get to meet a lot of different practitioners. Another thing that I think about, in my world, I sort of know the practitioners. I'm generally going to run into the same folks over and over again in the family law realm. You're going to be meeting the municipal attorney, the other side of a contract that's a business attorney, the other side of a real estate closing that's a real estate attorney. Mm-hmm. Right? You're meeting a lot of different attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what makes a good adversary and what makes a not so good adversary?
Right. Well, it's kind of funny too. You're absolutely right. Because in these circles, I will meet a bunch of the same people that are all particular to these circles.
Right.
And so it's great because I can get a lot of high fives wherever I go because I'm not usually a stranger in a variety of situations, which makes me feel a little more comfortable,
okay.
Right? It's not
all
like
right.
I'm walking into. But I think it's important for attorneys, and I don't always do this well. Nobody does. Or maybe there are some people. I don't want to make a broad statement like that. But to the extent that you can work together with other people, it makes it that much easier. I know that clients often want a pit bull.
Right.
And that is great. But if your attorneys can work together across the aisle to resolve your issue, you may, under some circumstances, be able to save money and aggravation if we can all sort through things or at least maintain a professional relationship with one another. Sometimes we don't all get there. Sometimes
right.
personalities don't work out. Sometimes we get frustrated or tired and we do and say the wrong thing. And I admit that I'm not a perfect person. No, freely. But to the extent that we are able to maintain that level of professionalism with one another only helps. And especially when you are dealing with small circles of people,
right.
we know who works together and we know who doesn't. And we can tell how things may shape up in the long run in preparing for a case. You know, this person is difficult to work with. They will never settle. So you know going into it where you're going to be at, that this is going to be litigious and litigation. It's going to cost your client probably more money to resolve and to whatever means. You know, it's just things that you have to be aware of when you're going into some things. And it does make things challenging. And at the end of the day, I don't think it helps anyone's client, truly. You know, it makes the attorneys a lot of money.
Sometimes.
But
yeah.
I don't know.
Sure. It doesn't help clients when the lawyers are having an interpersonal battle
yes.
on someone else's dime.
Right, because at the end of the day, our clients may be very adversarial with one another, and we may have very adversarial issues, and this is getting back to my dad and I don't share the same point of view. Sister Melanie and I don't share the same point of view. It's being able to approach that respectfully, knowing that we're both on both sides, advocating as hard as we can for our clients. There's no doubt. But being able to do so in a way that's not personal. It's not personal.
There's, sure. Gotcha. Okay, let's pivot over to technology.
Mm-hmm.
As a solo practitioner, and literally a solo practitioner, you've got to generate a lot of work. You've got to communicate effectively. You've got to schedule yourself with clients, with adversaries, with courts.
Mm-hmm.
So what tools are you using to streamline this so you don't drive yourself completely crazy?
I admit very few tools. Very
good. Okay. Well, how about scheduling? How can someone schedule with you?
They call or text me or email
okay.
me. I had
okay.
tried to use Calendarly.
Okay.
People weren't really responsive to that. They didn't seem to understand. Maybe it was because of my lack of instructions or they just didn't want to engage on that platform and that's
right.
fine. It was
mm-hmm.
nothing ventured, nothing gained. But I am one of those people that I will respond via any means that you come at me. So that's it. And yes, so I will. And people are very surprised too. I answer the phone, well, office, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, yeah, can I speak to the attorney? I'm like, speaking.
Yeah.
What?
So you don't have a fake voice? You don't have a fake
oh,
voice?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Muffle your voice one
right.
way and then muffle the other law way.
Law office
yeah.
of...
Maybe a British accent when you answer and then shift over to your Jersey accent later.
That's right. Yes, I'll hit the Jersey accent even harder so that people will definitely notice the difference. And you know, I had somebody on one of those phone calls. You know, you're calling some company or whatever, and you're trying to hit 5, 4, and 78 or whatever to talk to somebody. So I finally get to talk to somebody. I'm like, I need to speak to your supervisor. I'm like, oh, she was not being resolved. She waited a while, then got back on the phone as herself, and I said, you cannot fool me. Usually I can be fooled. I must have been on the 5th cup of coffee, though. I was ready to...
Oh, my God.
And she finally had to crack down and admit that she was the same person twice, pretending to be her supervisor. It's pretty epic. But I've never tried that in my own practice.
That is classic. All right. Let's move over to your website, because you have a very interesting website. You have an interesting logo.
Yes.
I'll let you just attack that. What's up with the logo? Describe it and why.
Okay, it is about an attack that actually didn't happen-ish. So, that's vague. That's lawyer speak, right?
I should have some music for this.
I know, somebody playing the organ or something. So, what had happened... So, my logo, for anybody who hasn't seen it, is a buck kind of rearing up. And it originated in my mind to draw when... based on an actual experience I had in the woods. I was running cross country at the time, and I was in the Morris County Park System, Jockey Hollow, where my family spent a lot of time. And so I'm jogging, you know, shorts, shirt, nothing. Right. In the middle of the trail was a buck, and he was a big buck. And if you are a buck hunter, you would have just been jaw dropping. Okay. I'm not a hunter myself, but I mean, yeah. He had a lot of antlers happening. It was not pretty. Well, he lowers his head and he starts grunting and, hoofing the ground and this thing. And I'm thinking, okay, Raiders of the Lost Ark, yeah. You know, the ball rolling, you know, the stone. I'm screwed here. But I decided to try to stay cool.
Right.
So I'm trying to be, I don't even know if I'm gently talking to him or whatever, but eventually whatever does happen is in this path, we wind up circling each other, a very big circle, because I don't want to get any closer to him than I have to be. And so when we have completed 180 degrees and we're both on opposite sides of the trail, he's had his horns down the whole time and just really revved up. And I've never seen a buck that angry. I mean, I come from an area with a lot of woods in Morris Township originally. And so I'm used to seeing deer everywhere, sure. Bucks, whatever. Anyways, so for some reason, he was real riled. But anyway, when we got to opposite sides of the trail, he looks at me one more time, turns around and runs away. And I'm like... And then I turned around and ran in the other direction because, you know, adrenaline does it. I was jogging anyway. And I'm gone. But I think about that often, and even in the practice of law, because getting back to pit bull, whatever, you can be aggressive or you don't have to be. That was an intense situation, and it could have ended really badly. But instead, it didn't, because he told me that he was upset with me, and I told him that I was going to be chill. And we worked it out, and we got to the other side. Mm-hmm. But if he had to, surely he would have bored me to death. And these are choices, you know? And it doesn't have to, you know, this goes back to negative perceptions of attorneys. You can be aggressive, but you can still get things done in a way that's appropriate and moves things forward for your case. And sometimes that is a lot of hooting and hollering or whatever. Yeah. And sometimes it is... Let's step back. Let's look at this problem a different way or something. So you can have both.
That is awesome. I knew you were going to give me a great story. I didn't know it was going to be that good. And am I also hearing you say that you drew it?
Yes.
You drew the deer, the buck, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And, I mean, yeah, my experience is deer takes a look and hits the road.
Yes.
So this one hung in there a little bit longer than you may have bargained for. All right. Very cool. All right. Now, next, back to the website. Okay. There is a really cool picture of you with a very snazzy blue business suit on. Mm. Seemingly some sort of a notebook or book on your lap. And a fairly pregnant lady sitting next to you on a park bench. You have to explain this one.
Yes. So that was... Not an actual client, as photography tends to be. Mm-hmm. I will admit that. That actual person is my wife.
Yes.
And she was pregnant with our daughter. And there was actually, if we're going to get to the real truth of it, without any drinking. It was actually a part of our maternity shoot that just went really well. And and so while we were there, I thought, what the heck? I like the picture. And that's what it is. But again, I do want to represent people through all of their life stages. And this is one of those many life stages.
Yes. So. I think it's a beautiful pick. And I knew you'd have a reason for it. You didn't just pick that picture because it's a beautiful picture. You said there's a reason for it. That's really cool.
And I love having Jen around. So it's nice to see her on my website.
She's with you. She's with you. And the baby in utero is with you as well.
That's right.
Because you say on your website also that you have your dog with you, Pesto Parmigiani.
Yes.
Plus the wife, plus the baby. So everyone's circling around. Dad's not far.
That's right.
So it's cool.
Actually, he's physically in the office below me. So if you...
And really is, close.
Yep. The lawyer's diary, we were both listed in Mountain Lakes.
Gotcha. All right. Very cool. You also have a couple other hats listed out on the website. You shouldn't have put so much on the website. You give me a lot of easy research.
I know.
You have the term artist and you have the term filmmaker also on there.
Yes.
So let's take those and knock those out of the park for me.
Well, while I was in law school, fighting with Sister Melanie over what is a jealous mistress and how does that apply or not apply to me specifically, this is one of those things that we didn't agree on. And I was busy exhibiting artwork throughout the state of New Jersey. At the moment, I think I've been in over 30 shows, small shows, you know.
Right.
And I'd also shot a couple of short films while there and then after. So I was an artist before I went to law school. And actually, if you ask my mom, she'll tell a great story about how at some point in my early childhood an artist had come to the school to give a little talk. And I said, I'm an artist too. And I introduced myself to her. And so, yes, you know, through my life, I've used art as a coping mechanism. And I don't know how to, self-healing for a lot of things, but also a tool for educating other people. I've done a short film for the Alumni Association of the Morris County Drug Court. I've done a short film, a short series of Ponies at Law, which are puppet ponies who discuss the law topically with people. And so they will sit down with a professor from Seton Hall Law and discuss where the children go in a divorce. Can I write my own will? How to speak like an attorney? You know, what is a copyright, trademark, patent? I think we have, I don't know, over 20 episodes online, webisodes.
Of the Ponies at Law?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, you shared something with me and I did look at one or two. Take me back to the short films related to the drug court. Where can we find those?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think on my art website you could probably find them.
Okay.
And it's basically how, I think the title is How Drug Court Changed My Life. While I was clerking with the Honorable Judge Critchley, who is an amazing human being, and I'm so fortunate to have been his law clerk during that time, he was the judge for drug court, and that was where I got my involvement with meeting some other outstanding people, including Charles Johnson, who was involved in the program at the time, and Dr. Rebecca, who ran the writing component and the jail cell component of the course, or the program, I'm sorry. And they were outstanding people, and I just wanted to stay involved in some small way.
Right.
And so I wanted to do this film with them to show people. The drug court is a program I believe in.
Yeah.
I don't believe that people who have problems with addiction are bad people. I don't think it's a bad people disease. And I've represented some people who have in criminal matters. And I, you know, a lot of people have made choices, or maybe even they weren't choices at the time. And it's hard. It's hard. But recovery is possible, but it just takes a lot. It takes a lot. And this is a story of some very strong individuals who made it through the process of drug court and came out the other side. And they're wonderful. Their stories are very moving. And I was very fortunate that they would share those stories with me and that I would be able to put this up. So
So the stars are some of the success stories, some
correct.
Of the challenges, and then some how they overcame those challenges.
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. Cool. I got to find those. And I'll get all your contact. I'll wrap it all up at the end. You said you have an art or artist page, so we got to get that before we're done. Okay. I can't run out of time before I also mention that you have sprung into some political activities this year. Tell
yes.
me about that.
Well, I was born and raised in Morris County. I was born in Morristown Memorial Hospital, mm-hmm. and I was raised in Morris Township, lived in Morristown, and now I'm living in Morris Plains. So I couldn't escape the Bermuda Triangle of the Morristowns, nor did I want to. You know, you have to get involved in the process. The process will go on with or without you, and it's important that everybody has a voice and they're being heard. And I want to make sure that my little girl and everybody is able to access programs and services in Morris County in a way that in a meaningful way. And so I decided to get involved because as an attorney, I feel like I've been given an opportunity to do more for people. And our profession has allowed me to understand and be involved in land use applications, be involved with patients in psychiatric facilities, be involved with everyday people with everyday problems or extraordinary problems. My job is solving problems for people. And right now I'm running for freeholder of Morris County because it's a job that requires people to solve problems every day with the Morris County budget, but also it affects a lot of things in Morris County. In fact, everything in Morris County affects Morris County roads. It affects Morris County parks, educational facilities like the Votech School and the County College, the recreational programming, the list goes on. And it's important for people to be represented.
Gotcha. So you're the hometown girl running for the hometown freeholder office. I'm going to take a little guess here. The first out freeholder candidate in Morris County. Is that about right?
So as I understand it, I'm the first openly LGBTQ plus candidate to run for freeholder in Morris County.
Yeah.
I'd also be the first Democratic female ever elected for freeholder of Morris County.
Mm-hmm.
There are Republican freeholders who are female, but never
sure.
a Democrat. And
right.
our first Democrat in 46 years. It's historic, but it's also doable. Last year the races were very close and we had some awesome candidates who would run that year. And this year we're closing in on that gap. And I look forward to an awesome November 5th. So.
Okay. Well, I'm always fascinated when people have the demands of family, the demands of a practice, and throw their hat in the ring and run for an important office. I really compliment you for doing that because the rewards seem a lot smaller than the burden that you carry as a candidate and as an elected official for a lot of attorneys.
Yes. Well, you've got to be running for the right reasons. You know, and there's never an easy time.
Right.
I figure there can't
sure.
be. But yes, at the moment of this recording, I mean, my daughter is nearly 7 months old. But she's, my wife is better at breaking down the fractions of what percentage of what. But, going on 7 months old, I think on the 6th. And so, yes, this is important to me, but it's not for me. I feel like it's important for the people of Morris County to have representation. And if you want to know more about the issues and then what's going on with our campaign, I recommend looking at our campaign website for that. And it's not what I'm here to talk about on
sure,
the show at
sure.
the moment. But,
we'll link out to that. We'll give that website. Folks can go do some digging. And I certainly commend folks to do that. And to our listeners, if you're thinking of running and you're thinking of getting involved, it can round your life out in a unique way. So let's get back more to my normal couple of last questions. Advice to your younger self. You've been out practicing here a bunch of years and you've done a million different kind of cases. What do you wish you knew then that you know now?
I usually would do a in my opinion, a good job going with my gut. But sometimes, and this is something that anybody who's been practicing a while could probably tell my younger self, but if you get a bad feeling right off the bat with a case or a client, it's go with your gut. Because you'll find out that as you progress through this case, that it's just going to get worse. And we've all had them. So sometimes true. Right off the bat, it's just not a fit. And you can't fit a square peg into a round hole. And part of you working with this person is your ability to work together. And if from moment one, you cannot gel, and I'm not talking about great things. You're not proposing to them. But
sure.
But if it's just looking rocky right off the bat, it's better to step aside and say, you know what? It's not going to work out, and we can do it. And it happens even now, you know, but to the extent that you can limit that and say, hey, and this goes back to boundaries as well.
Sure, sure. That's great advice. Okay, last two. We got it done. The big ask. I ask you to be in charge of the world, lawyer, judge, client, court world. What would be your big ask to everyone to make the whole system work better for clients and for all of us?
Oh, that's a really intense question. I was speaking to some people recently at one of the courthouses I was in, and administrative scheduling would be, you know, is a top priority, I'm sure, for the administrative offices of the court. But sometimes it does get challenging, especially when you're scheduling trials or other things. Administrative hoops. I love the new online filing for attorneys, the e-courts. Mm-hmm. I would love to see e-courts also for landlord-tenant and for chancery. And not just because I have a huge case in chancery that requires me to fill out, you know, all kinds of things that now have to be hand-delivered to the court. Also usually by me. But just change hats there. But yes, I think that really the experience of being in court, the actual litigation, should be the most challenging part of your case, not necessarily the filing of things, the scheduling of things, and even finding the courtroom in some courthouses. I mean, have you tried to find a courtroom in Morris County? They just renumbered all of the court. They did. And now I've been there for years, and it's still like a challenge to find things. There are three third floors of the Morris County Courthouse, I believe. And I'm not, you know, Sussex is not challenging like that, by the way, you know,
yeah.
Or other court. But what I mean to say is you've got to be able to cut through all of that. A lot of courts as well, a lot of municipal courts, you still fax things there.
Right.
You know, and the fax gets lost or the fax, or you have to fax things to chambers. And clients too, or people who are pro se, they don't have access to a fax machine.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in this court system has an email address. Often they don't like to give it out because they don't want to be bombarded by emails. I understand that fax definitely has a limiting.
Yeah.
But that's not right. You know, everybody's coming mm-hmm. in and needs access to the courthouse, and there should be another way of doing it. I haven't looked into it. I know that, the AOC is doing a great job. They're trying really hard. I'm sure it must be a Herculean task to try and rodeo in lawyers, judges, pro se litigants with all kinds of agendas and issues. So, but there's always room for improvement, right?
Gotcha. So. I like that. All right. We wrap up with how do people get a hold of you? Let's start with the law practice. You have a website, mm-hmm. phone number. What do you want to put out to the world if someone wants to get a hold of Kara?
So you can access my website by either typing in Kara Parmigiani Law or more simply lawyerforyounj.com.
I like that. Okay.
And all my information is on there.
Gotcha. You mentioned an artist website.
I do. So nearenemy.com.
Nearenemy.com. Cool. And for the campaign?
Kara for Freeholder, C-A-R-A, for Freeholder.
And it's
yep, you got to spell it
all
out.
All right.
I guess I have this thing, yeah. I always like four spelled out.
Yeah, cool. Kara for Freeholder.com.
Uh-huh.
So lots of homework for everybody. This has been really fun. I knew the hour would go by super fast. We're already over the hour
goodness.
I tried to keep it under. And we kept this thing rolling really, really nicely. So thank you so much for visiting me here. And if we go on to July 4th, it'll be well after July 4th when people listen, but still wish you happy 4th, happy birthday to US. And I'm just going to sign off and say thanks so much, Kara.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I really appreciate this. It's been an honor.
It's Attorney Dan Straffy. Thanks for listening to The Bold Sidebar. Share The Bold Sidebar with your lawyer friends and professional colleagues. Please subscribe on iTunes and check out the show notes for the episode highlights and links to resources discussed on the show. Give us your feedback on social media at Horn Law Group, Divorce in a Minute, and of course, The Bold Sidebar. And tell us what you want to hear and who you want to hear it from.
Hey everybody, it's Jeff again. Need to find us? Check us out on the web at hornlawgroup.net or give us a call at 732-736-9300. Thanks.